Welcome here to Beyond the Lights. I'm Pat Doherty. Alongside me, Ian Nielsen. Glad to be here with you again. Episode number two. We're excited about this as we talk about what it means to be a great teammate. That's one of the topics for today's show. Again, make sure you like our Facebook page. If you have questions or comments or topics you think you would like to hear us discuss, you can always send us a message or hit me up on Twitter at PDESPN. And we'll talk about it in our next podcast. Again, this is Beyond the Lights, where we kind of talk about the different topics that are outside of sports. Obviously, we could sit here and break down sports. That's not the hard stuff. The hard stuff is really getting outside. What's going through the head of athletes? And how to be a better teammate, how to be a better coach, those type of things. Our guest here today is Ian's brother, Eric. Eric is the head baseball coach over at Concord High School, former Division I baseball player and catcher at Purdue, played in the Northwood Leagues as well. And, of course, Ian's here. Ian, how are you doing today?
Pretty good. How you doing, man?
Doing great, man. Doing great. First podcast, I thought went great, and I thought there was a lot of good pieces to that. And as we carry it over into this show, and we look at what it means to be a good teammate, a great teammate, and how also to deal with some of the aspects, everybody's been on teams, whether it's a work team, a sports team, community, you're at church, basically, you could view that as a team as well. If you're part of a family, family's a team, right? I mean, you got different players on a team, you got kids and wives and in-laws. I mean, those aren't always fun to handle with. I know you guys are lucky, you guys all get along with your in-laws, right?
That's right.
But when you look at the team aspect, and that's what we're talking about today, I've coached. Eric is a coach right now. Ian has played, obviously, we talked about it last week, Division I baseball, also played at Taylor as well. But when you look at being a teammate and a good teammate, I think everybody wants to be called a good teammate. But what does that mean? What does it mean to be a good teammate? Because it's not always being and doing what everybody else is doing. Sometimes it's going against the flow, going against the current, to say. And especially, Ian, as we talked about, part of the reason I think you left Ball State is maybe not because of your teammates, but the environment that was there, especially off the field, wasn't conducive to where you were. And let's kind of start right there. Was there a struggle with certain teammates in the aspect of where your faith was, who you were as a person, and how to balance that with what they wanted to do outside of the sport of baseball?
Yeah, I mean, when you think about being a good teammate, most of the time you think about, like, who's going to be the best on a team. Mm-hmm. Like, performance-wise. A lot of people think, yeah, I mean, a good teammate's the one that helps us win. And even though that's a true statement, but most of that's, like, taken in the context of performance, again. But what I realized is that Ball State, you know, looking back on my even little league years, I mean, there was times that I had teammates that, you know, weren't the best, like, baseball players or, mm-hmm. you know, basketball players or whatever. But they were just great guys. And when we got on the court, you know, these are guys that you're like, all right, we're going to go to battle together. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just a one-man show or a two-man show. It was a team that might not have the best talent, but you found ways together to win. And when I was at Ball State, we had some of the most talent that I've ever, you know, played with.
But yeah, a couple of them are in the pros.
Yeah, first-round draft picks.
Yeah.
You know, and Percy being one of them from last show. But if you look at our, you know, performance, you know, as wins and losses, you'd find that it almost seemed like a little bit of a roller coaster. And we didn't see the success for what we could have been given the talent because of a lot of, I don't know, disunity, because of potential people just trying to be out for themselves. You know, when you have success leading into maybe getting drafted, mm-hmm. now you're talking dollars, right? When you start talking dollars, people see that as their avenue for, you know, maybe their childhood dream. And that can take away from what the team's doing and be about what they're doing. You know, in a game on a big stage could be plus or minus a couple $100,000 for some people that's in the first round draft pick. Mm-hmm. That's a big deal. But when that gets caught, you know, in your mind, it gets you away from what the team's doing. And, you know, I saw that firsthand, at least being at Ball State, but not just that. You know, it's not just that, because that belief of getting maybe wrapped up into other things outside of what the team is focused on is actually a heart issue. You know, it's a heart issue of what's important in my life right now, mm-hmm. in every single moment. And what I found is that Ball State, you know, there's sometimes that it was more about, you know, having fun, which is, you know, we all want to have fun, but having fun at the expense of others, maybe at the expense of, you know, the team, at the expense of the coach, whatever that might be. It was fun at the expense of something that hurt the unity of the team. And that's the thing that I think a lot of people get, they don't see. You get blinded. That's why it happens. People that actually do those things that hurts the team or hurts others, they don't always see that. And so when we talk about going against the grain, it's actually just going against what, you know, is you see could be hurting the team or hurting success for others. And if the majority of your team is doing that, that's a going against the grain. And that's what makes a good team. You know, that's what makes a good teammate, is the one that's going to call out and say, hey, this is hurting us, and what are we going to do to fix it? And trying to get the guys to get rallied around that.
Once again, that's Ian Nielsen. Ian is my co-host here on Beyond the Lights. His brother's here as well, and not just because he's Ian's brother, but Eric has been a former Major League baseball scout, former Division I athlete. He's a current head coach over at Concord High School for baseball. And Eric, as you look at building a team and being a coach, and we talk about good teammates, and especially in a sport like baseball, because it's an individual sport surrounded by a team, because you are one-on-one with a pitcher. But there are individual moments, as Ian kind of alluded to, where you do have moments where you can give yourself up for the team or be a team player, such as bunt a guy over, sacrifice your at bat for somebody else. And we kind of go back, and as we look at different, when we look at different aspects and different factors, and one of my favorite quotes, John 15:13, greater love has no man than this, than to lay down his life for his friends. And we're not asking athletes to give up their life, to sacrifice their lives, but it's kind of the same principle. And coach, when you look at trying to build a team and the continuity and the chemistry, we talk about this time and time again in sports. Chemistry is such a big factor. And it's why the St. Louis Cardinals win so many dang World Series with a bunch of nobodies. It's chemistry. They have great chemistry. And when you look at being a good teammate, I have to believe that you have different levels. You're going to have your followers and you're going to have your leaders. How hard is it for a teammate, for an individual in a team, to decide which role they play, and how much is it a coach to help determine that for the team? Coach?
I think it comes down to, I call it the two C's. You've got confrontation and you've got competition. So basically, as we are athletes, naturally, we feel the need to compete in almost everything we do. Mm-hmm. And obviously it's a double-edged sword, but a lot of times I caught myself in high school competing to be better than anyone on the team. And you have to be careful with that. That's perfectly fine, but I often did it like I would go hit by myself and I would not pull any freshmen with me. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't think about, well, how can I make this team successful? In the end, I thought about how good can I get myself? How much better can I be than everybody else? And like, that's a natural thing that we fight as athletes. And that's the first thing. The second thing is confrontation. I had my first year of coaching, I had a mom come to me and say, so-and-so, she was speaking about a senior. She was like, so-and-so has been riding my son all season. I didn't know if there was anything you could do about it. And I said, well, ma'am, you are probably one of the luckiest parents here, because the guy who was a senior ended up going on to play at Northern Kentucky, a great guy. He was trying to get her son better. And I was mm-hmm. like, you should feel lucky that he's riding him. And I think kids these days are so scared of confrontation that they want to be best friends instead of best teammates. And there's a big difference. It's the same thing as saying you need to be a coach and not their friend. As a teammate, you need to be constructively criticizing the other guys when applicable. But the problem is people get defensive when that happens. Mm-hmm. And that's what creates your barrier. That's what separates a good teammate from what people think is a bully. And I think we need more of that. Sometimes confrontation is really good. I had it at Purdue a couple of times where I got into it with a couple guys, specifically our center fielder, John Moore. Me and John got into it, and we're best friends to this day. I mean, mm-hmm. It's in the heat of the moment. You get after it, and then at the end of the day, you sit down when the dust settles and say, you know what? I see what this guy was saying. And, like, it'll make you push yourself if you do that.
I love confrontation, and I think it is a great point in sports. And the other side of that is being a teammate that's willing and respecting your teammate to a point of being open to that confrontation or that criticism. Because you're right. A lot of times in today's society, and I feel like this is in coaching last season, when you criticize somebody, they shut down. They don't realize that it's coming from a place of caring and you're trying to get them better. I remember playing in a Legion Regional. And Sean Stone, very talented baseball player, very talented pitcher, probably, you know, could have, if he was a little bit more mature in high school, probably could have played pro ball. Had a live arm. Eric, you caught him in high school. And I can remember being in a regional in the first inning he pitched and had a rough start to the game. The umpire really wasn't calling what he wanted, and he gave up a couple runs. And he came in, threw his glove, and I knew at that moment as his teammate that we needed him to win the game. We really did. And not just him on the mound, we needed him at the plate. So I got in his face. I mean, it got close to being a physical confrontation in the dugout. But the thing is, Sean knew and respected me and knew I was coming from he didn't want to hear it at that point, but I knew he needed to hear it. And what did he do? He went up his first at bat, hit a grand slam. We took the lead. He hit four home runs in that doubleheader, and we won the regional. But I had a feeling that if I didn't confront him and didn't have that confrontation, we would have lost him and we would have lost the game. And that was me being a good teammate, knowing what he needed at that point. And him then being a good teammate in the sense of he could have gotten in a physical fight and we would have had a situation that could have really blown out of proportion. But he checked himself as well, knew he needed to hear that, and at that point knew as a teammate, I need to listen to this, and then I need to go react. And Ian, when you talk about both of you guys played Division I baseball, and so you're going to have guys that are open to that, and you're going to have guys that aren't, that are going to be a little bit more egotistical and say, I don't need to hear this from you. Who are you? Why are you trying to tell me this? How do you handle guys like that? Do you continue as a teammate to try to get them to buy in? Or do you let them go? I mean, is that the point where you just say, hey, I'm going to wash my hands of this situation? Is that being a good teammate?
No, I mean, one thing I wanted to point out, because I think it's the direction I would go, and that's what I tried to do at Taylor, actually, is there's a difference between competing and striving for excellence.
Mm-hmm.
See, competing, a lot of times, and Eric mentioned it, it can get a lot of friction on the team. And the reason is because you always, in competing, you're saying, I want to be better than someone, usually, mm-hmm. right? I want to be better than the guy that's maybe the starter in front of me. I want to be better than the teammate or the team that we're about to play. I want to be better than, you know, anyone in my division, whatever. Okay, mm-hmm. Competing is saying, I want to be better than something. Excellence is saying, this is my definition, I guess, but this is what I roll with, is excellence is saying, I want to be the best best me. I want to be the best baseball player I can be, mm-hmm. right? So you're competing with yourself to be the best you. So now I'm not offended. I'm not defensive when I look at the player in front of me, right? So if a team is supposed to be, hey, what can we do collectively to win this game? And if you are not the starter, the best thing for you to do is not to be pointing out all the flaws that the person in front of you is making, but to actually surround them with support to try to get a win that day, right? Mm-hmm. But if you're competing, most likely, and I've seen this, you know, on the teams that I've coached, they sit on the dugout pouting because they're not starting and waiting for that flaw, right? And they're just
hoping for
and then they'll go talk to their parents and be like, hey, in practice, this person did this, or mm-hmm. you know, whatever, in the game, how could they made that error, right? And then you get that friction. So excellence to me is trying to create a mentality that, hey, no, you need to be the best you, right? Don't be anything other than that. When you got, you know, people who are scrappy players and they go try to hit home runs, they should not do that, mm-hmm. right? We need more scrappy players. And then don't try to make them be a home run, so, or a home run hitter. But that's the whole thing for me, is when you're trying to then, on a baseball team that might not have those people or that kind of mentality, that are always competing against each other, when I was at Ball State, that's what happened, is I had that kind of, you know, culture. But when I was just like, hey, like, I'm going to support you, even though that, you know, we're kind of competing against each other,
mm-hmm.
it threw the whole thing off, right? They were kind of like, it's kind of odd, right? That's kind of odd. And then, you know, people started asking me questions. Why? Because they're like, why are you like that? It wasn't just that. It was like, mm-hmm. hey, why don't you drink, right? Hey, why don't you cuss? Hey, why don't you whatever? So it sticks out like a sore thumb. But then I can start talking to them, being like, hey, this is my mentality, this is why, right? And those conversations happen. And when you get the influence of your seniors asking you, I had the luxury of being a starter freshman year,
mm-hmm.
right? And being a pivotal part of the team. So when I got the influence with the leaders and the captains of the team, and they were starting to kind of buy into this thing, that's how you change cultures, right? And or when I eventually become a captain, right? When I'm the leader, I can tell now the freshmen, like Eric was talking about, I can start creating that culture that leads to a dynasty. And to me, you can't try to change a culture immediately. It's something that you are. You know, it's not something that you try to do. It's something that you are.
Mm-hmm.
And if you try to do it and you don't see it and it's not in your heart, you're going to get burnt out. But if it's in here and you let it come out, you're sustaining it because you're the change already. And I think that's key.
One of my favorite sayings, and I've tried to live my life by this motto, is be a better version of yourself today than you were yesterday. If you do that every day, try to be better than yesterday, and not focusing on yesterday, because yesterday's past, but today is the present. But if you're trying to be better than yesterday, whether it's in the gym, whether it's on the baseball field, and if you get a whole bunch of kids or players or teammates in any sport, people at work, I mean, this transcends just sports. I mean, if you're in an office, basically a team or a family, you're a team, and you're all trying to work towards being better versions of yourself, whatever that looks like to you, whatever your morals, your faith, whatever that is, your goals. I mean, it's easy for me right now. I'm trying to lose weight again. So getting in the gym every single day and seeing that, hey, I can do an extra rep, or I'm on the treadmill for an extra 5 minutes. Like, that's easy to judge that. But here's my question. How do you do that in faith when you look at your relationship with God, or your relationship with your church and your family and faith? How do you measure something that's so hard to measure? And when you talk about being a teammate, each day being better than the version of yourself the previous day, I mean, that's hard. And it's hard to, especially, I feel like in today's sports, the way that everybody's so offended about everything, and you bring up God and Christ, and it all of a sudden that's just such a negative. And I don't understand that. Guy like Tim Tebow, who is very grounded in his faith, is almost chastised because of it. It becomes a media circus, and it's not about Tim Tebow anymore. It's about, well, Tim Tebow's a Christian. So that's what we got to focus on. He's labeled as a Christian, and somehow that's a negative. And that's what I don't understand, but the measurement of each day getting better, whether it's, I don't know. I don't know how to, I struggle with that myself. I don't get how to measure, am I better than I am yesterday? Have I made more of a stride in being a better Christian? Yeah. I mean, that's a struggle.
Yeah, quite honestly, one of the things that I did as an athlete is I took measurement of performance, mm-hmm. you know, out of my sports life into my spiritual life. So, you know, as a hitter, if I can't hit a curveball in D1 baseball, you're going to be on the report as, hey, throw curveballs, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that, hey, if I don't work on my weaknesses, then I'm going to be continually in a habitual failure of not being able to hit a curveball, right? So what I started doing in my life is looking at my weaknesses and saying, hey, I need to fix those. I need to fix those. I need to fix those. And if eventually what I found is I got drained because I'm trying to work on 5 million different things.
Exactly.
And I'm realizing, hey, it's not working out because I continue to fail.
Mm-hmm.
But then the whole idea of Christianity is, hey, like, you don't have to worry about your failures because it's already been taken care of at the cross, right? There's no measurement anymore. You know, it says in the Bible that, you know, he's casted your sins as far as the east is from the west. So if I continue to care about my sins and sit mm-hmm. there and dwell on them, then I'm doing against what Christ came to do,
mm-hmm.
right? So, you know, I can't take the same athlete mentality into my spiritual life. So for me, I say, you know, hey, there's no measurement. There's no measurement. Because if God is love, like the Bible says, and you're really, truly in communication and relationship with him, then you'll be transformed into love. And so the only thing that I know I do in my life to actually give me a gauge of where I'm at is, am I loving well? You know, so I guess this kind of ties into one of the verses I was reading recently. It's in Matthew 5, verse 46. It says, if you love those that love you, what reward will you get?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, again, on a baseball team, that kind of happens a lot. You got these cliques, right? You got these cliques of, hey, I kind of like you, you know, and we kind of are on the same page. So let's, mm-hmm. let's kind of sometimes, again, more friction. But the point is in this passage that, like, hey, if you love well, you can't just love your clique. You got to love everybody else that you don't click with. And so my gauge for my walk with Christ is, hey, if I'm walking close with you since you're love, I'm going to start being more like love.
Mm-hmm.
So that I can take this passage into any avenue of life and be the best teammate. So, you know, again, I don't try to say, hey, I drank too much or I cussed too much or whatever, because the whole point isn't that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They've been casted as far as from the east as the west, those sins. But how am I being changed into love? And as much as athletes may romanticize that, it's not about that. It's about being the best you. Love looks like you being the best you. That means you pushing your teammate to far, like, during sprints. This is one thing I loved when I was helping out, you know, Eric, is watching sprints. Because you get to see when someone's already given up on themselves.
Yep.
Right? But then you get to see those who know how to push them because they're loving them to be a better person in that moment, right? And then the question is, are they going to buy it? But that whole picture is, hey, love someone else and be love. And that's what I think Christianity is all about.
Once again, this is Beyond the Lights, our podcast here on ESPN Radio 1027, ESPN1027.com. I'm Pat Doherty alongside Ian Nielsen, his brother Eric, a Division I baseball player at Purdue. He's coached throughout the state. He's currently the head baseball coach over at Concord High School. And as we're talking about faith and being a good teammate and how that goes hand in hand, and coach, as you hear Ian kind of talking about that, because you see firsthand clicks. I mean, you see that. You're at a public school. You know that everybody on your team's not going to get along. They're not all going to be going over to each other's house at the end of the day. I mean, that's just not realistic. People like different things. And even though there's a commonality, you all like baseball and they all are on the same baseball team, it's ridiculous to think that they're all 22 or whatever players are all going to be best friends. That's not going to happen. But when you look at what he just talked about, that loving each other as a teammate, that's one of the hardest things I found. If there was a guy, I mean, there was guys on teams that I really couldn't stand. I didn't like what they did outside, whether it was drugs or drank too much, or I felt they were a negative impact, very much all about themselves. As a coach, you deal with that. You know you're going to have players that are about themselves. And due to numbers or due to talent, they're going to be part of the team. Because, you know, that is how it is, especially in high school sports. From a coaching standpoint, how do you take your beliefs and your morality and try to get your team to find that level of, I may not like you, but I can still love you as a person and as a teammate?
Yeah, well, it's difficult when you talk about my beliefs because, obviously, in the public school system,
you can't really talk about that.
It's really not an okay thing.
it's
not really an okay thing. But you can still instill the values that you find in the Bible with the players, you know. And really, when I was young, baseball was about me. Like, I'm talking when I'm coaching. Mm-hmm. I wanted to win almost at all costs. And now I've kind of learned from over the years that I'm trying to also teach these guys how to be men. And we talk about that a lot. We talk about leadership. You know, when you were on staff, we had leadership meetings and stuff in the off season, and we talk about it a lot. And I don't really care about necessarily them putting their worth in who they are as a baseball player, but we talk about being a father, you know, being a husband, being a great employee. Like, those things, if they get anything from the experience in high school, those things are more important to me than anything else. That being said, when I pair guys up, I try my best to always pair up guys that may not like each other. You know, I try to pair up maybe a senior with a freshman. I don't like the freshmen staying together. I don't like the sophomores staying together. And Ian's right. You know, teams are full of cliques. If you go to a lunchroom in any public school, you're going to sit there and you can point and pick out, okay, those kids are in band. Okay, those kids are in football. Okay, you can go all the way down the line. And the thing that makes a team work is having a couple guys, you need one or two, that have no type of bias whatsoever and can go back and forth between the kids that no one likes and their buddies, and no one would know any different. Mm-hmm. And I think the big thing we're missing here is credibility too. Like, Ian could sit there and say those things to those guys at Ball State, and this is why I don't drink, this is what, but he had credibility. Like, he was successful in how they viewed success. Mm-hmm. So they wanted to get a piece of the pie, right? Well, as a coach, if I'm constantly doing something I'm telling my players not to do, or if I have a leader who's constantly doing something he's telling other people not to do, they're going to lose credibility. And I've seen a lot of guys that could be really good leaders, but no one respected them because they were just all talk. So there's a lot that goes into it. This is a very complex issue.
Yeah, I think that's a great point to make, because it's easy in front of a coach to say the things. Everybody knows what to say. This isn't like a test that nobody knows the answers to. Everybody really knows what it means to be a good teammate. They know the idea of being a leader, doing everything 100%, working with the underclassmen, not quote-unquote drinking publicly. But then we also know that if you're at parties and you're doing things behind quote-unquote closed doors, people know that too. Like, that's one of the funniest things about coaching, and Eric, I know you can attest to this, is kids think that they get away with stuff. Like, we hear stuff all the time.
Yeah.
Like, you're not surprising anybody. People talk. We understand. And it's the same on teams. If you have a guy who you know in front of coach is sitting there giving all the correct answers and doing everything he's supposed to in front of coach, and you know he's the first one as soon as practice is over to go do everything you're not supposed to be doing, not going to class, whatever, partying, whatnot, and doing his own thing, it's hard. You do lose credibility. And where Ian was a perfect example of having credibility, not only are you having success, but you're also doing the things that you believe in your morality and your faith are important to you. But that doesn't mean that you can't have success on the other side. And I guess my question is when you do have those other guys who are having success, but they may not fall into your morality or your faith, that's okay, right? I mean, you don't have to. I mean, you can have the conversation with them about your beliefs and whatnot if they're open to that, but you don't want to force that upon them.
No,
and,
yeah.
And there then can become another kind of a friction and competitiveness of you and how you're doing things and how they are, and then that can end up ultimately tearing apart team and friendships.
Yeah, I mean, that was actually one of the main things I learned when I went to college. In high school, I was more of like, hey, you know, I mean, I was pretty much the star for the team.
Mm-hmm.
We had a lot of talent, but, you know, a lot I was seen as that. And I took that to the point of, hey, like, this is going to be my team, and it's going to be done my way. And so I was telling people, mm-hmm. you know, how they need to act and what they need to do. I mean, yeah, I wanted the best for them, but it was more of like, hey, like, I need this on the team because I know this is best. And when I went to college, it was obviously a totally different ballgame, right? And so learning, hey, like, I can't do that because it's not going to create any unity. And then two, how do I with a sphere of influence of being a starter as well and all this other stuff, create that, right? Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that I was reading a Bible verse was talking about, don't throw pearls to swine and they'll trample on them, essentially. And what he was referring to is you can't just assume that if I just start spreading all this truth, mm-hmm. whatever it is, that everyone's going to absorb it, right? That everyone's going to all of a sudden know the truth,
yeah,
right?
People learn different ways.
Exactly. So, you know, for me, it's kind of egotistical a little bit to say, hey, like, I'm going to just tell you how it is, and then you're going to change. No, that's not how it's going to happen. But if I can be that in the right moment with the right credibility or influence, right, to then create this openness in your heart to put one seed, right? Guess what? Mm-hmm. I've done my job. God's going to do the watering. That God's going to, you know, feed that thing so that his, you know, his word doesn't return void to him, right? That's what the Bible says. So like when I speak a word and it's actually planted in someone's heart, then guess what? I did my job and God's going to do his. But if I'm just throwing seeds, right? If I'm just throwing seeds and there's no fertile soil in that heart, mm-hmm. He's going to start getting mad that I'm throwing seeds at him. He's like, hey, why are you throwing seeds? I'm not looking for any.
Yeah.
But when I created that credibility, that influence, they're like, hey, you know, what are some of your seeds? Guess what? That's when I start speaking into it. And so if you have someone that, again, is maybe a great performer, is one of the best guys on the team, but doesn't click with your morality or your beliefs, the best thing you can do is just, like I talked about, be the best you,
mm-hmm.
right? Be love, be that example so that you can create that credibility and you can create that situation to start, you know, spreading the seed. And that's the most loving thing you do. If you look at what Jesus did, he didn't just always go around, you know, just telling people what's up. You know, he didn't go around spreading the gospel all the time. I mean, sometimes he just healed them or mm-hmm. he just talked to, like, the woman at the well. He kind of just said, you know, hey, what's going on? Oh, hey, you know, you have five husbands and like all, and just kind of reading her mail. And then all of a sudden it clicked. Her heart opened up to him to speak into it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And if we think as Christians that we're just in this place of, hey, we're just going to tell you what your sins are, or, hey, we're going to point out all this, that's not, one, the Jesus that we look at, and two, that's not love.
Nope.
And so as a person that might be on a team that has a whole bunch of different things that are against maybe your belief system, again, it goes back into excellence. Be the best you to open up the opportunities to start spreading the good news, or, you know, whatever truth you want to.
All right, as we wrap up our podcast here today, again, talking about teammates and faith and how the two walk hand in hand in a lot of different ways, let's get our final thoughts. Again, I'm Pat Doherty alongside Ian Nielsen. This is Beyond the Lights. Our guest here today, Coach Eric Nielsen. And, Coach, as you hear this conversation kind of evolve and you talk about the different aspects, and I think the greatest thing Ian just said is we can't be judgmental. You can't cast, as he says, his seeds. What are your final thoughts on our topic here today?
Well, I mean, maybe not exactly on that topic, but I think that there's not a lot of people that are like Ian, and that's in a good way, you know, obviously. And so when they're sprinkled, they're out there, and they're out there in every level of sports, mm-hmm. but there's not enough of them, you know, and that's what's sad is that. You know, and I'm speaking about Protestants here, but 31.5% of the world make up the Protestant population. Those are people who willingly admitted that they are, right? Mm-hmm. And so we have 70% of the world that is maybe not ready for their heart to be open. And not only that, but 70% of the people that aren't ready for that, and you have maybe 0.25% of people that are like Ian that are willing to and able to help and influence, mm-hmm. that's a tough equation, you know? And so really the goal is to be a leader in Christ and show people like how to do those things and almost like equip them with the ability to do it. Because I think there's some people that may feel that way, but they don't know how to communicate it, or they don't know how to reach someone, or even just like communicate effectively to someone else, period. You know, and that's sort of skills that are needed to make it all happen. And that's kind of the struggle that I see, I guess.
Ian, final thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, that is the truth. That's why, you know, I have a passion for this, is because when I went to Taylor, I did meet a lot more people like me. And I mean, mm-hmm. These were the guys that, you know, Eric's met. These are the guys that were in my wedding. But the reality is now I'm out in the world again. It's such a true statement that, man, where are they? You know, where are those that have that similar passion, that similar outlook? And that's the whole point of this thing, mm-hmm. is that we need, it's a need. You know, we need more people that can have those skills to communicate effectively, that can love well. I mean, I would lump all of the, you know, seed example I gave, all the not casting stones, all that, you know, trying to still stand for Christ, all that into loving well. You know, and I know that's vague, but literally it's loving well. It's saying, hey, I want to treat you like I want to be treated. I don't want someone just coming at me with all their beliefs mm-hmm. when I'm not open. Right. When I just met them 2 seconds ago, I'm not ready for that. So then why do it to them? Right. I mean, we got to me, literally, if we had more teaching and healthy conversation on this, I think it all ends with, hey, how can we love well in every aspect of life, even if you're on a team?
Here's the thing. And Ian, I've known you for a long time. And the reason I love doing this podcast with you is you don't see lines either. And you don't see segregation in different faith, different types of faith. You talk about there's so many different avenues for believing very much a similar thing, and it can get muddied out there. It really can. You have different people believe in different things, or believe in the same thing but just in different kind of ways. You talk about Catholics and all the different types of religion and those type of things, but the one thing I love about you is you don't see that. You see love and faith and willing to talk to anybody at any time, regardless of what their background is. I mean, I was born and raised Catholic, and we've had some great conversations, including today, about faith and then tying it into sports, because there's so many different lessons. And I think that sports can help with a lot of those, and faith goes hand in hand, in my opinion.
Yeah, this is the crazy thing, is like back 2,000 years ago when Jesus roamed the earth, you know, we had tons of sinners in the Bible running to meet him. You know, tons of sinners, tons of people going to meet Jesus on the mountaintop. And then 2,000 years later, we have a lot of people leaving, you know, this person called Jesus in Christianity and churches, right? I don't think Jesus changed. Mm-hmm. I think the way that we present him and we presented him has changed, right? And that's a call to all Christians to look in the mirror and say, hey, this isn't about church, as in, you know, the Sundays. This isn't about the production you put on Sundays. This is about you and God. And how well do you guys communicate? And what kind of relationship have you guys fostered? What kind of even idea do you have about this God? Mm-hmm. You know, if you have an idea about God that, you know, hates people, well, again, then you'll probably hate some people. And it does get into making sure you have a healthy perspective on what the Bible's saying about how God is love. But at the end of the day, it's not about, you know, Christianity. It's about love and God and how are we presenting him. Mm-hmm. And so to me, this is it's a challenge to the church. It's a challenge to everybody, including myself. I mean, this is the biggest challenge, and I think it's the hardest thing, is to love well. But again, 2,000 years ago, people were running to Jesus. 2,000 years later, doesn't seem like it. And that's a call for everyone to kind of rise up, look in the mirror, and say, hey, how am I not loving well? What are those things that I can improve on And that's pushing people away, because I guarantee you that wasn't like Jesus.
Once again, this has been Beyond the Lights with Ian Nielsen. I'm Pat Doherty alongside his brother, our guest here today, Eric Nielsen, the head baseball coach over at Concord. Again, if you like the podcast, please share it. And if you have any questions for Ian, hit us up on our Facebook page, Beyond the Lights, or Ian, email address.
Yeah, it's Nielsen, I@patrickind.com.
Hit him up. And as well as if you have topics, if there's something you want us to discuss here on the podcast, definitely hit us up on our Facebook page, and we'll include that in our next podcast. Again, this has been Beyond the Lights here on ESPN Radio 102.7.